I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words.
Patricia T. O'Connor joins us now, and we're going to be talking about the English language, taking your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Pat is the author of now five. I have to go through the five titles every time you're here. Should I? Woe is I.
How
Words
about first
fail me.
Left?
You okay. Send me. Origin of the Species and Woe is I, Junior.
Yes.
Is that the complete
list?
Yeah,
that's great. You're wonderful.
Well, you know, I never memorized those poems in high school. I've memorized exactly one poem my whole life.
Really?
And I was always impressed by those people who could just
do
Wordsworth and Tennyson.
What's the poem you memorized?
It's very brief. And because I was an art student and it was mean. It's William Blake. He wrote, "When Sir Joshua Reynolds died, all nature was degraded. The king dropped a tear into the queen's ear, and all his pictures faded."
That sounds like a limerick.
Well,
doesn't it have a limerick rhythm, sort of?
Well, it was an old
who knew?
Artist who.
Blake the limericist.
He did not like Sir Joshua Reynolds.
I guess not.
Before we take calls, you wanted to talk about something that I'm sure has puzzled a lot of people.
Yes. I've actually had a couple of emails lately from listeners that I thought I'd share because they're important subjects. One comes from a listener who's actually of Indian ancestry, and he asks, why aren't white people included in the expression "people of color"?
Because everybody has color.
Yes, he says white is a color too, isn't it?
Well, and but nobody's white, really.
Nobody's really white. Nobody's really black. Those are terrible labels. I guess we're stuck with them, I suppose, until we can come up with better ones. But I think "people of color" is a pretty good one to replace "non-white" because "non-white" is a terrible word. It's always bothered me.
It's a negative.
It's a negative. Why describe people in a negative way, as in terms of what they lack or what they aren't? And it's long bothered people on all ends of the color spectrum. And replacing it with "person of color" substitutes a positive idea for a negative one.
But many years ago, people said someone was a colored person.
Mm-hmm.
And that stopped being used. But isn't a person of color really just another way of saying the same thing?
Well, yes, it is. But the truth is that over the years, over the many centuries, we've had a lot of these labels come and go, but none of them are really new. I mean, they've come and gone in popularity. For instance, the term "people of color" goes back to 1797, at least.
Really?
And when that appeared in writing, the person writing, who was a planter in Santo Domingo, was noting a term that was being used, and he found it interesting enough to write about it. He said, the term "people of color" originates from an intermixture of the whites and the blacks. So it was a term of mixed race.
But it also is a reflection of the situation in Santo Domingo, which wanted to distinguish itself from its mm-hmm. neighbor on the island, Haiti, where in that case they saw the population as being African.
Right. Actually, there in Santo Domingo, the planters used three different terms. They used whites for Europeans. They used "people of color" for mixed race or freed blacks.
Hmm.
And they used "Negro" for blacks who were in a state of slavery. So they had a rather intricate system of nomenclature.
And now we have this new version of Huckleberry Finn, in which the word, the N-word.
Right.
We can get into why we say the N-word. Why that's been now substituted by the word "slave."
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Which, of course, is a distortion of what Mark Twain was writing
there.
Oh,
absolutely.
Many of the black people in the book were not slaves.
Wouldn't you like to to hear a conversation with him right now about that subject. But that brings me to what another listener wrote in to ask me last month. He noticed that an article in the Times used the terms Black American and African American interchangeably, and he wondered whether there were different occasions for using the different terms. And in fact, most dictionaries regard them as pretty much synonymous, as meaning an African American is a Black American of African ancestry.
There was a time when people were saying Afro-American. Kind of disappeared.
Yeah, that only surged up very briefly, that term in the 70s, and it sort of faded out. But the term, it's interesting that the term African-American also dates from the late 1700s. So African-American and person of color, people of color, both date from the late 1700s. And actually, the many Black commentators disagree about whether one should prefer the term Black American or African American. Because on the one hand, you might say very few Black Americans have a true connection with Africa anymore, or it's pretty tenuous. Like my connection with Ireland, which is no.
So you don't want to be a hyphenated Irish American.
No. I mean, one grandparent out of eight had parents born in Ireland. Now, that's pretty diluted by the time it gets down to me.
But I'll bet that you have a cousin who wants to be an Irish American. And we see that in the Native American / Indian population, where I've had guests who said to me, please don't say Native American, I'm an Indian. And then somebody else will say, please don't say Indian, I'm a Native American.
Exactly.
And it tells us something about how the person wants to be perceived in society.
Yes.
And I think that's perfectly fine.
Oh, yes, it is. And in fact, there's been a lot of interesting scholarship about the evolution of racial terms and how the preferences changed and why.
And it also ties to religion. I mean, if you say somebody's a Jewish American, that's a person who could come from Russia, Poland, Romania, Germany, France, England, Syria, Morocco.
That is more of an ethnic / American or ethnic hyphen American
label. But we don't say
Whereas,
Catholic American. We don't say Protestant American.
No, we don't say that. But and also if we said German American, for example, or Italian American, that almost to many people implies divided loyalties.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, does that mean you're only partly American?
So that a legacy of World War II?
I don't know. I don't know. That's an interesting question.
My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor, and we're talking about the English language. And in a few moments, we'll be taking your calls at 646-829-3985. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And for all of you who write to me later and say, I can't figure out how to do that, just go to the WNYC page and then look at the bottom, and there is a list of shows. You click on the Leonard LoPage show. And then they give you instructions on how to leave a comment. It's pretty simple.
Sounds simple to me.
Should we go to some calls is there anything more you want to say before we go to the calls?
No, let's go to calls.
Okay. The first caller is Bruce from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Hi, Patricia. Consider this. Every word in the English language that ends in A-S-H except one word is pronounced the same way. Bash, cash, dash, gash, slash,
sash,
mash, sash, trash, but W-A-S-H is wash. Why is that?
beats me. Maybe it was supposed to be spelled W-O-S-H. No,
or
I'm
maybe
joking.
Once wash.
A lot of people say wash.
Mm-hmm.
So that solves that problem.
But in English, we are definitely not consistent.
Right, no. We don't have a phonetically spelled vocabulary or lexicon, which I think is a good thing, because you can see the history of words in their spellings over the years, and I think it's interesting. I'm against the idea that we should phonetically respell the language.
Although there were many people who have felt differently. George Bernard Shaw.
Yeah, well, he was a crank.
he famously said that the word fish should be spelled G-H-O-T-I.
Right.
So, and if listeners don't know how that happened later, maybe we'll explain it. A listener writes in about when did the word goal become mission statement?
Oh, I think when people started realizing that goal was just too simple and they needed to make it sound more trumped up.
But there are mission statements. There are people who actually write out what their goals are. Yeah. Our mission in public radio is to drive certain people in Congress crazy.
I think sometimes mission statement sounds a little highfalutin, don't you? There's nothing wrong with goal or why we're here.
Well, my mission statement right now is I want to make as much money as I can. How's that?
Okay. Does that mean you want a break for a station break?
No. We're going to go to another call. Amy from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I'm the one who left the comment on the pun segment saying that to avoid losing your train of thought, you need to have a one-track mind.
Mm-hmm.
And
we got derailed? Is that what happened?
I think somebody else did.
You're listening to the right station anyway.
Oh.
Absolutely.
you're on a roll now.
Never mind.
Well, okay.
No terminal jokes here.
I have to go ahead with this before I lose steam.
Yes, okay, go ahead.
Actually involves a different kind of transportation. Back during the early days of the swine flu epidemic, Brian had a guest on his show who said that people were catching it from other people, not pigs, because pigs don't get on airplanes and go other places and spread the flu. And my thought was that, so you're saying pigs don't fly, but the swine flu.
Oh,
very good.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
has to get a copy of that book, The Pun Also Rises.
We should give prizes, but we don't have any copies other than the one that we're going to keep in our stage, in our show file. Rose from Queens, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. The word regard and regards.
Mm-hmm.
In regard to, but regards, give my regards to another mm-hmm. person. And regards is used incorrectly many times. What do you think about that?
Oh, you
like
mean
the mayor says, in regards.
In regards to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Regard is a, the singular, it has a couple of meanings. It can be like a greeting or a salutation. It can also mean the view you take of something. In my, mm-hmm. you know, my, you regard something in a certain way, or, and this is your regard of it.
Okay, but with the S.
It's an error.
It's an error.
Yeah.
Thank you, because it's so misused, and I'm hearing it over and over again.
It's in regard to.
It's in regard to.
In regard to or with regard to, but you send your regards to someone.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. Now, I don't understand this. Mark in New Jersey said, not to pick on Leonard, but at least twice he used the following form to announce dates. May 2nd, May 27th, instead of May 2 and May 27th. Also, is there something wrong with what I said?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. Actually, I did a long blog item about that because, believe it or not, there are a lot of people like this listener out there who worry about how dates are presented. But it's perfectly okay to use either a cardinal number or an ordinal, you know, cardinal being the May 2, ordinal being May 2nd.
I've never heard this expressed as a problem before. I've said May 2nd all my mm-hmm. life, even when mm-hmm. I was talking about September 3rd. So,
yeah.
And I would say September 3rd. Uh-huh. This is the first time I've heard about it, but it does strike me as the sort of thing that we shouldn't get all excited about when there are wars and pestilence
and tsunamis.
Tsunamis
and earthquakes and... True.
But he also says the New Yorker will refer to an event on May 3rd, T-H-I-R-D, shouldn't that form be limited when a number is in relation to others, such as the third and fourth occurrence? That, at least, is the instruction in the AMA Manual of Style.
Well, the AMA Manual of Style may be for, is that for doctors?
I don't know.
I don't know. Oh, no, I don't know.
Meretricious Association.
The New Yorker and style, the New Yorker is in a world of its own as far as the style that it uses. They still use a hyphen for the word for co-op apartment or a reenactment, that kind of thing. And they have a lot of other.
They have that thing that I would call an umlaut, but it's another.
It's dieresis.
Dieresis.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. They use dieresis
like
a lot.
Problem.
So I can't really comment on yeah.
But on I suspect that the New Yorker knows what it's doing.
They know what they're doing. At least they're consistent. That's the main thing.
A couple of listeners have left comments asking about people who are white, born in Africa, and now are citizens here. Are they African Americans?
See, that's why I think these labels are kind of silly. I wish we could all just be people.
Well, I used
to
work with a guy who coined
a phrase. And not think we have to identify ourselves racially, but, you know.
But I used to work with a black newscaster who used to use the phrase afrogenic. I said, Robert, that's perfectly
fine.
Sounds
like fine, some kind
except,
of surgery.
Well, he was kind of suggesting that your genes go back to Africa, something like that. But it sounds very much like a drop of blood kind of thing, which
well,
I found
offensive.
Well, then
we're all afrogenic.
But he was inventing. Yeah, that's true. Every person on Earth
we can all be
is
traced
afrogenic.
Back to that primeval woman.
Oh, yeah, there's absolutely no answer to these problems. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back with more of your calls to Patricia T. O'Connor. Stay with us. We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor, and we're taking your calls at 646-829-3985. And let's go to Greg. Where are you, Greg? You're in West. You're in Montclair, New Jersey. Oh, well, okay. I've been to Montclair. Hi.
Hello. Hi, yes. I was calling because I was having a very, I think, relevant conversation with my students in class today. I'm a professor at Montclair State University. And I have a lot of Hispanic and African-American students, and it's a comparative politics class. We were discussing Mexican politics. And my students mentioned that racism is worse in Latin America in terms of more prevalent than it is in the United States, except for the country of Brazil, where apparently racism is not as big a problem. Would you agree with that?
Well, I'm not that familiar with South America, but my husband is, and I believe that's pretty much the impression he's left me with. But isn't there a lot of prejudice in many South American countries by people of Spanish heritage against the indigenous Indian populations?
Yes, but people
often
with Spanish
the elites
heritage
are the lightest skinned people in not in every Latin American country. It changes, you know, it varies from one country to another. But even countries like Brazil, which are very proud of the fact that so many people are mixed race, actually, if you look at the leaders. Until recently, almost all of them were the lightest skinned. And if you look at the poorest people, they usually are more likely to have darker skins. And then,
exactly
of course, the people in the Amazon, in some cases, they're still not even considered real humans by many people in a country that prides itself in being so tolerant. So it's a lot more complicated.
Right. I guess every country wrestles with this, not just...
In Mexico, everybody talks about being mestizo, which is a version of mixed race.
Uh-huh.
Yet at the same time, again, look at who the leaders of Mexico have been over the years. Almost all of them have been very light-skinned.
Mm.
Okay, well, I didn't know we were going to get into that, that part of language. Do you think... But language does... The way we use language reflects
the culture. It always has.
For example, somebody just wrote in about the phrase, "That's very white of you." I mean, that's a racist remark.
Yeah, it is. I actually haven't researched that, so I shouldn't say that flat out, but I would guess so. That's white of you. It's like saying that's gentlemanly of you or something. But it's true. Over the years, these terms come and go. We think of terms like, although colored was the dominant label for black Americans in the mid to late 19th century, it didn't just arise then. All these terms, person of color, African American, sometimes just African, colored, and Negro, were all in use in the 1700s.
It's interesting that the
changed places.
The NAACP has never felt the necessity to change its name, despite the fact that the terminology has changed four or five times since they were formed.
Right. And I think probably it's good they haven't changed, because they would have to be changing an awful lot.
Should we take some more calls?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Michael from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? Love your show. Love this segment. This one's been bothering me for a while. Why do people say, if they're in a particular jam, they've got to dig themselves out of a hole? Seems like digging is what got them in trouble in the first place.
That's true. It's the digging that got them there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't give you a history of that one.
I'm shocked.
You know, the idioms are often irrational. But
yeah, they are.
But we still know what they mean, don't we?
Yeah, but when you stop to think about it, it makes no sense at all.
Dig yourself out of a hole.
But there are so many. I, you know, you could go through a whole list of idioms that we all understand and understand instinctively.
Uh-huh.
Because I'll bet the first time you ever heard that phrase, you didn't say, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You understood completely what it meant.
Sure.
Yeah, it took decades for me to figure out that it didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
How about inflammable versus flammable? Doesn't that mean the same thing?
They mean identical things. The first one was inflammable. The in the word is not a negative prefix. It's an intensifier. And it comes from a word in Latin, something like infiammare or something. Don't quote me, though.
So that meant it was more potentially flammable than the other thing?
Yes. But the word flammable was invented in the early 20th century at the suggestion of the insurance industry, because they felt that it would be less confusing to people if they had a word without what looked like a negative prefix in it. Mm-hmm. So that's why we have now flammable and inflammable, but they aren't opposites. And inflammable came first, was there for centuries before flammable came along.
Thank you so much for your call. Is it Dan from Manhattan? Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm reading from The Story of English, which was the accompaniment of that famous show on PBS. And I have an example of the word asked, but spelled and pronounced in Middle English as axed.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
it's cited
true.
By William Caxton, who was a 15th century standardizer of English spelling. And he writes this about a group of people. And one of them, named Sheffield, a mercer, came into an oath, a house, and axed for meat.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and specially he axed after Egus.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually puzzled about spelling, and he wrote this as an example of how the spelling in English was so various.
Mm-hmm.
Here is an example of the word asked spelled that way and pronounced that way. And what's interesting is that he was from Kent, mm-hmm. and the Jutes were the ones who invaded from Denmark, from Jutland, to Kent. So maybe there's even a provenance of that spelling.
Well, I think I can explain that. In Old English, there were two separate words, axion and askion. Askion and axion. And over the years, the form which came into Middle English as axed was more popular than asked. Axed was the principal way the word was used. When the Bible was first printed, he axed for writing tablets, ax and it shall be given ye, that sort of
right.
thing. And so the two spellings competed for a while, and ax was predominant till about maybe 1600, and then it reversed and it became ask.
What's interesting is that axed is actually easier to say.
It is.
I know.
I can't figure out why. That's an example of where the more difficult pronunciation survived, and usually that's not the case.
Usually,
so
we,
that's a
we
puzzle
go for
one.
The easier one.
Yeah, we do right. usually.
Thank you for
more
your call.
Yeah, go ahead. I've been hearing recently people saying this. I've been taken aback when they seem mm-hmm. to mean I've been disconcerted.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an old way.
An expression of surprise as opposed to being disconcerted.
Oh, I see. You mean. Using taken aback.
To mean something like, I was surprised to be asked. I was taken aback when I was asked to write my biography. They may mean I was ruffled or I was nervous.
No, I think taken aback
no,
is fine.
No, it means surprised or sometimes at a loss, maybe. But it's a common adjective, aback.
Although, do you know where aback comes from?
Way back.
Well, I mean, I'd imagine it means that you step back a bit.
It could be. It probably means
when
that it gave you a jolt or mm-hmm. you made you step back. I don't know. I'm guessing. But
it's a common adjective, aback.
It's a common adjective, we've been told.
Yes.
Okay. We have Adam from Manhattan on.
It could be. It probably means that it gave you a jolt.
Okay. We're having a little cross-wiring here, which we hope will be corrected soon. Adam from Manhattan, you're on the air. Will you turn your radio off? I think you're hearing.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're hearing the what we just broadcast. Okay, Adam is gone, but he would have said something interesting. I think
gone, but not forgotten.
Sai, hi. I guess that's what happened. It was very confusing to me. I was hearing
Chelsea.
A conversation that. Had already occurred, and I thought that was a strange deja vu moment in my life. Go ahead, Cy.
Cy from Chelsea?
Yes.
Right. Watching 30s and 40s films, you often see a police officer scratching his head and saying, well, I'll be a monkey's uncle. And mm-hmm. I just wondered, what's the derivation of that and why it's no longer used after the 50s or 60s?
Well, a lot of those old phrases that came along in the early part of the 20th century, especially the 10s and 20s, we had a lot of humorous phrases like, and we talked about some of these last month, the cat's pajamas, the bee's knees, the clam's cuticles, and I think I'll be a monkey's uncle probably came up during that time, and it's just a nonsense animal phrase, and most of them have kind of gone by the wayside, which is why we don't hear too many people say, well, you're the bee's knees anymore.
A listener has a Russian friend who wonders why we look out the window rather than through the window.
That's a good one. I think we're thinking of looking out an aperture rather than through a pane of glass, maybe. But I said something wrong just now. Aback is not an adjective. It's an adverb. I was taken aback, meaning mm-hmm. it's an adverb. Sorry about that.
Now, in response to that question about ASH, wash, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Judy points out that the W modifies the A sound not just in the word wash, but also in watch and in wall. So
oh, right.
it may be
say,
the presence of
whoa.
The W there rather than any than the ASH.
That could be.
Because I can't
is
think of
Judy
any W-A.
Is Judy a phonetician that... or something, a phonologist?
I don't know. Judy wrote that in. Mitch says, I've always wondered which is correct, much different or very different. People often say things like that's a much different situation, but it seems like it should be very different. Seems to me both are fine.
Well, there is a slight difference. You would say that is very different, but you could say it was a much different situation if you were using the whole thing as a compound modifier.
Another listener, Zachary from Brooklyn, is on the air. Hi, Zachary.
Hi. Yeah, I was just calling about like a fat chance. I mean, I don't know. Slim chance seems like makes sense. Is it like sarcastic or?
Right. We usually say fat chance when the literal meaning would be slim chance. So I think it's an ironic or sarcastic expression. Yeah.
Thank you for calling. We often have things that get reversed. For example, saying great or fulsome.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, fulsome is another one where it sounds like it should be something nice.
Right. It doesn't mean what we think it means.
Although it's coming back to the original meaning because people misuse it.
Mm-hmm.
Robert from Edgewater, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. It was very interesting to hear you talk at the beginning of the show about the usage of African-American versus black. I worked for a company that had a website called blackplanet.com, and on my first day in the job, I noticed people using the term African-American, and there were a lot of African-Americans on staff. But the website was called Black Planet, and sometimes it was used interchangeably. And I asked a woman who was African-American on my first day of work, you know, I noticed this difference. Which do you prefer, or do you have a preference? And apparently this upset her. She went to HR and complained, and I was brought in front of HR for being overly or racially insensitive.
And, I think there's a suit there, don't you?
a lawsuit. Eventually I was let go, and that was brought up as one of the reasons. Although I think there are others as well. Hmm. And what I wanted to share was, you know, at first I was kind of surprised, shocked, and outraged. But after a period of time, I got maybe why this woman complained, and what I tried to do was kind of put myself in her shoes, which is. Trying to imagine if I was working at a company and I got a new boss, and the first day on the job, the boss came to me and said, "Hey, Robert, do you prefer being called a Jewish American or an American Jew or a European American Jew? What's your preference?"
I'm not sure that's the same. I think if it were a Jewish organization, that might be a valid question. If they had a Jewish website. But we have run out of time, believe it or not. Mm. Thank you so much for your call. If you want to ask Pat a question, you can email her directly at mailbox@grammophobia.com. You can also click on Pat's blog at grammophobia.com to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. And, Pat, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. Meanwhile, people can read all of your books, and we'll see you again next month.
Thank you for having me on.